Lord Peter Wimsey. Starring Ian Carmichael as Lord Peter and Peter Jones as Bunter, with Martin Jarvis as George Fentiman. The Unpleasantness at the Bologna Club by Dorothy L. Sayers, adapted in 6 episodes by Chris Miller. Episode 1, Armistice Night.
Hey, Wimsey. I say, Wimsey.
What?
Wimsey!
Oh, hello, Fentiman.
What are you doing in this morgue?
Well, I wouldn't call it that, George. Funeral parlor at the very most. I mean, look at the marble, look at the furnishings. Look at the palms and that chaste bronze nude in the corner.
Yes, and look at the corpses. Clubs like this always remind me of that old thing in Punch. You know, waiter, take away Lord What's-His-Name, he's been dead 2 days. Look at old Ormsby there, snoring like a hippopotamus. And look at my revered grandpa. Dodders in here at 10 every morning, collects the morning post and the armchair by the fire, and becomes part of the furniture till the evening. Poor old devil. Suppose I'll be like that one of these days.
Cheer up, George. All this Remembrance Day business gets on your nerves, don't it? I mustn't say so, though, I suppose. They'd hoof me out of the club if I raised my voice beyond a whisper.
Well, they'd do that anyway, whatever you were saying. What are you doing here, incidentally?
Waiting for Colonel Marshbanks.
Dining with him?
How are things going with you?
Oh, rotten, as usual. Tummy all wrong, no money. What's the damn good of it, Wimsey? A man goes out and fights for his country, gets his inside gassed out, loses his job, and all they give him is the privilege of marching past the cenotaph once a year and paying 4 shillings in the pound income tax. Sheila's queer, too. Overworked, poor girl. It's pretty damnable for a man to have to live on his wife's earnings, isn't it? But I can't help it. I go sick and have to chuck jobs up. Money. I never thought of money before the war, but I swear nowadays I'd commit any damn crime to get hold of a decent income.
Oh, no, I wouldn't do that. Crime's a skilled occupation, don't you know? So if you're thinking of putting on a false moustache and lamming the millionaire on the head, don't do it. I'd find you out in no time. But seriously, I'm sorry to hear about Sheila, old lad. Look, I don't want to be offensive, but... Well, why don't you let me...
No. Damn good of you, but I don't care to, thanks. There's honestly not the faintest chance that I could ever pay you back. Oh, here's Colonel Marchbanks.
Ah. Well, we'll talk about it another time, George. Evening, Colonel.
Evening, Peter. Evening, Fentiman.
Colonel.
I say, is that your grandfather over there?
With his legs propped up on the stool like a pair of matchsticks. Yes, that's the General.
Excuse me one moment, would you? Must go have a word with him.
He's over 90, you know, my grandpa, Wimsey. Queer, isn't it, that for him the Crimea is still the war, and the Boer business found him too old to go out. He was given his commission at 17, you know. Was wounded at Majuba.
Hang on a minute, George.
What's up?
I'm not exactly sure, but the Colonel seems to... Hello, he's coming back.
Well, what's the matter? What's the matter?
Shh. What is it, Colonel?
I'm afraid something rather unpleasant has happened, Peter. Go and take a look at General Fentiman. Fred?
Sir?
See if Dr. Penrith is in the club and ask him to come here at once, if he is.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
Well, Peter?
He's as stiff as a wooden doll. Rigor mortis fairly advanced.
What's the matter? What's the... He's dead! Take him away! Take him away! He's been dead 2 days! So are you, so am I, we're all dead and we never noticed it!
All right, George, all right. Now calm down, old lad. Take it easy. There's a good fella. Challoner!
I'll take him to the library.
2 days.
Give him a stiffer.
Righty-ho, lad, yes. Poor devil's nerves are shot to pieces.
Come along, Fentiman.
He's dead. We're all dead.
Ah, there's Pemberthy. Pemberthy! Over here.
Don't rush me, Wimsey. Excuse me, gentlemen.
Born at last, I suppose.
Yes. Rigor well established. beginning to pass off by the look of this knee.
Odd that, ain't it?
What? Oh, I've been expecting this. Heart very weak. Might happen any moment. Anyone spoken to him today?
Oh, yes, I saw him after lunch. I didn't speak, though.
Nor I. Thought he was asleep.
He usually is, what? Oh, was, I mean.
No one spoke to him, then. Oh, well, what's the time? 7? Say 5 hours for Rigor to set in. Must have taken place very rapidly. He probably came in at his usual time, sat down, and died almost immediately. Well, there's nothing to be done. Went in his sleep. Would somebody ask the secretary if there's an empty bedroom we can put him in?
Yes, yes, we will.
Oh, there you are, Cunningham.
James, fetch the key of number 16 from my office and tell them to put the bed in order. I suppose, Doctor, when this rider passes off, we shall be able to...
Yes. You'll be able to do everything that's required. I'll send the proper people in to lay him out for you. Somebody had better let his people know. Only they'd better not show up till we can get him more presentable.
Captain Fentiman knows already. Major Fentiman's staying at the club. He'll probably be in before long.
Oh.
And there's a sister, I think.
Oh, yes, old Lady Dormer. She lives round in Portman Square. They haven't been on speaking terms for years. Still, she'll have to know.
Lady Dormer, you say? I say not rarely. Was she the old boy's sister?
Yes, ma'am. Why?
Lady Dormer was an old friend of my wife's, and she passed away, died, you know. Lady Dormer died at 10:30 this morning.
Mr. Marbles, my lord.
Marbles, good evening.
I'm not disturbing you, I trust, Lord Peter.
Good lord, no, my dear fellow. Very glad you turned up. The Coburn 86 always tastes a lot better in company. A discerning company, that is. Bunter, a glass for Mr. Marbles.
Very good, my lord.
Thank you, Bunter, thank you. You're quite well, I trust.
I am in excellent health, I'm obliged to, sir.
That's good. Been doing any photography lately?
A certain amount, sir. But merely of a pictorial description, if I may venture to call it so. Criminological material has been distressingly deficient of late.
Well, perhaps Mr. Marbles has brought us something, Bunter.
No, I can't say that I have precisely, Lord Peter. Nothing of an undesirable nature is involved, I fear. That is, I trust.
If you will excuse me now, my lord.
Yes, righty here, Bunter.
Thank you, my lord.
Well, Marbles, what's on your mind?
Well, the fact is, Lord Peter, a curious question has arisen with regard to the sad death last week of General Fentiman at the Bologna Club, to which I understand you were a witness.
Well, if you understand that, Marbles, you understand a lot more than I do. I didn't witness the death. I witnessed the discovery of the death, which is a very different thing by a long chalk.
By how long a chalk? That is just what I'm trying to find out.
Really? Well, pray go on.
Very well, let me begin at the beginning. The facts of the matter are these. General Fentiman had, as you know, a sister, Felicity, 12 years younger than himself. She was very beautiful and willful as a girl. This is some 60 years ago, of course. And one day she went out before breakfast and got married in the most indecent secrecy to a middle-aged man called Dormer. Very honest and abundantly wealthy, but horrid to relate, a prosperous manufacturer. Buttons, in fact, were the revolting antecedents to which this headstrong young Victorian had allied herself.
Oh, most distressing. So what happened?
Well, naturally, there was a terrible scandal, and the parents did their best, seeing that Felicity was a minor, to get the marriage annulled. However, she checkmated their plans pretty effectually by running away with her husband. And he, being a man of prompt action, lost no time in putting her in the family way. And so the old people put the best face they could on it in the grand Victorian manner. That is, they gave their consent to the marriage, forwarded their daughter's belongings to her new home in Manchester, and forbade her to darken their doors again.
Highly proper.
Yes, Lord Peter. Young Arthur Fentiman seems to have shared the family views. In due course, he himself was married to a suitable gentlewoman with a few thousand pounds. But she died early and left a numerous but feeble family of children. Of these, the only one to attain maturity was the father of the two Fentimans you know, Major Robert and Captain George Fentiman.
I don't know Robert very well. I've met him once, frightfully hearty and all that. Regular army type, what?
Yes. At any rate, up till 10 days ago, there were just these four Fentimans surviving. Robert and George, and the General and his sister, Lady Dormer, from the earlier generation.
What about Lady Dormer's child?
She died in infancy.
I see.
The old General lived on a small fixed income which came to him through his wife and his army pension. He had a solitary little flat in Dover Street and an elderly manservant called Woodward. And he practically lived at the Bellona Club.
And Lady Dormer?
She resided in Portman Square with a distant relative, a Miss Anne Dorland. And though she was a fine, generous-hearted woman and frequently made overtures of peace towards her brother, he held sternly aloof, as I say, and refused to acknowledge the existence of anybody called Dormer. I hope I'm not boring you, by the way.
I'm bearing up. Waiting for the point where the money comes in. There is a steely legal glitter in your eye marbles which suggests that the thrill is not far off.
Quite correct. I now come... Oh, thank you. Well, yes, I will just take one more glass. We now come to the melancholy event of November the 11th last, and I must ask you to follow me with the closest attention, Lord Peter.
By all means.
Lady Dormer was an old woman and had been ailing for a very long time. And in the first week of November, she caught a severe cold, which turned quickly to pneumonia. On November the 10th, she was sinking fast and scarcely expected to live out the night. Accordingly, Miss Anne Dorland and the companion sent a message to General Fentiman that if he wished to see his sister alive, he should come immediately.
After so long?
Yes. And for the sake of our common human nature, I am happy to say that this news broke down the barrier of pride and obstinacy that had kept the old gentleman away all these years. He came, found Lady Dormer just conscious, though very feeble, stayed with her about half an hour and departed, still stiff as a ramrod, but visibly softened. This was about 4 o'clock in the afternoon. Shortly afterwards, Lady Dormer became unconscious and indeed never moved or spoke again, passing peacefully away in her sleep at 10:30 the following morning.
And you think the shock and nervous strain of the interview were too much for the old boy's feeble system, so that he too died sometime that same day?
Sometime the same day, yes. Exactly what time, we do not, of course, know. And here, Lord Peter, we come to the point at which I would like your help. I am the Fentiman's family solicitor, and shortly after the war was responsible for drawing up a new will for General Fentiman. There was a small legacy of £50 to his manservant Woodward, and one or two trifling bequests to old military friends. Then came the bulk of his estate, about £2,000 invested in sound securities, and bringing in an income of slightly over £100 per annum. These securities, specifically named and enumerated, were left to Captain George Fentiman, the younger grandson. It being the General's view that being disabled, married, and so forth, he stood in greater need than his brother. Robert was, however, named as executor and residuary legatee, thus succeeding to all such personal effects and monies as were not specifically devised elsewhere.
Was Robert satisfied with that arrangement?
Oh, dear, yes, perfectly. He knew all about the will beforehand and agreed that it was quite fair and right.
Nevertheless, it appears to be such a small matter on the face of it that you must be concealing something perfectly devastating up your sleeve. Now, out with it, man. Come on, out with it. Whatever the shock may be, I am braced to bear it.
The shock was inflicted on me personally on Monday by Lady Dormer's man of business, Mr. Pritchard of Lincoln's Inn. Having made an appointment, he called to see me, and when he arrived, informed me of the following particulars. A good many years before her death, Lady Dormer, who, as I said before, was an eminently generous-minded woman, made a will. Her husband was then dead and had left her something like £700,000. And in her will, she divided this very handsome fortune between the people who, for one reason or another, had the greatest claim on her affection. £12,000 were to go to Miss Anne Dorland. The whole of the remainder was to pass to her brother, General Fentiman, if he was still living at her death. If, on the other hand, he should predecease her, the conditions were reversed. In that case, the bulk of the money came to Miss Dorland, and only £15,000 were to be equally divided between Major Robert Fentiman and his brother George.
Interesting.
I quite agree with you. It is a most awkward situation. Lady Dormer died at precisely 10:37 a.m. on November the 11th. General Fentiman died that same day, presumably after 10 o'clock, which was his usual hour for arriving at the Bologna Club, and certainly before 7 p.m. when his death was discovered. If he died immediately on his arrival, or at any time up to 10:36, then Miss Anne Dorland is an important heiress, and my clients, the Fentimans, get only £7,000 or so apiece. If, on the other hand, his death occurred even a few seconds after 10:37, Miss Dorland receives only £12,000. George Fentiman is left with a small pittance bequeathed to him under his grandfather's will, while Robert Fentiman, the residuary legatee, inherits a very considerable fortune of well over half a million.
Well, well, well. And what, Merbles, do you want me to do about it?
I would be grateful, Lord Peter, if, without creating any public agitation or scandal, you'd discover for me and my clients the precise moment of General Fentiman's death.
Bunter!
My lord?
Bunter, I'm going down to the Bologna Club this morning to see Dr. Pemberthy. I'd like you to follow on with your camera and the rest of the paraphernalia in about an hour's time when I will tell you what I want you to do.
Very good, my lord. I take it your lordship has a new inquiry in hand.
Yes, Bunter. Quite new. Now, Bunter, you are quite sure that this suit is all right, are you? No, I want to look approachable, but on no account loud. And I can't help wondering whether the stripe of invisible green wouldn't have looked better if it had been a remote purple.
No, my lord, I do not think purple would be an improvement.
Oh, well, thank goodness. I'm sure you're right, Bunter. You always are. Well, give me the malacca, would you, with the foot rule marked on it? Thank you. And where's my magnifying lens?
Here, my lord.
Aha.
And the fingerprint powder is in your lordship's right-hand coat pocket.
Thank you. Well, I think that's all. Oh, by the way, you don't know a fella by the name of Woodward, do you? Elderly, valeted the late General Fentiman for years.
No, my lord, I do not. But if your lordship wishes it, I could make inquiries of the Honourable Frederick Arbuthnot's man, who is a friend of mine. He has a wide circle of friends in service, my lord, and could no doubt arrange an introduction.
Well, do that then, would you? And I'll expect you at the Bologna Club with the doings in about an hour's time.
Very good, my lord.
Pemberthy! Hello, you're just the man I want to see.
Oh, hello, Whimsy. What's up?
Well, I just wanted a word with you about old Fentiman. Frightfully confidential and all that, don't you know? Look, do you mind if we go in the library? It may be a bit more private in there. Oh,
certainly. What's the problem, exactly?
Well, it seems the precise time of the poor old writer's departure has become an important item. After you.
Thank you.
Question of succession, do you get me? They don't want a row made, so they've asked me, as a friend of the family and all that, don't you know, to barge around and ask a few questions. Well, so far, I haven't been able to find out what time he actually arrived here that morning. So, working backwards, what is your opinion as to when the old boy died?
Well, one can't say to a minute when a man died by looking at his back teeth, you know.
Well, of course not, but, well, I would have said that he'd been dead a long time. The rigor mortis was beginning to pass off, wasn't it?
Yes.
And I thought that rigor usually lasted 24 hours or so.
Oh, sometimes it goes off quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Quick come, quick go, as a rule. Still, I agree with you that in the absence of other evidence, I should have put the death rather earlier than 10 o'clock. I can only suppose that, what with the death being sudden and what with the warmth of the room, he was very close to the fire, you know, the whole thing came on and worked itself off very quickly.
Oh, well, that's all right, Pemberthy, but when? Just when did it happen?
Lord knows, I don't.
Are you perfectly satisfied about the death, by the way?
Satisfied? Yes, of course. I shouldn't have given a certificate if I hadn't been satisfied.
Nothing about the body struck you as queer?
What sort of thing?
You know what I mean as well as I do.
You mean the knee?
I mean the knee. Old Fentiman's left leg swung loose at the knee. Not knowing quite what it meant and seeing you didn't want to call attention to it, I didn't put myself forward at the time.
No, I wanted to think it over. You see, it suggested at the first blush something rather...
unpleasant?
Yes.
Yes, well, let's face it, Vimpathy. Let's admit straight away that when Rigor starts to go, it usually begins with the face and jaw, and not suddenly in one knee joint. And Fentiman's jaw and neck were as rigid as wood. I felt them. Rigor just starting to go off, I should say, but no more. So how do you explain it?
It's extremely puzzling. As no doubt you are aware, the obvious explanation would be that the joint had been forcibly loosened by somebody or something after Rigor had set in. In that case, it wouldn't stiffen up again. But how it happened... the only thing I could think of was that a waiter or somebody had found him and tried to move him, and then got frightened and barged off without saying anything. It sounds absurd, but we have one or two shell-shock cases here that I wouldn't answer for in an emergency.
Now, that's an idea. I wonder if George Fentiman was alone in the smoking room at any time during the day. You know, he might possibly lose his head, what? I mean, you know, if he suddenly came on the stiff course of his grandpapa.
It's very possible, yes.
Well, I'll have a shot of finding that out. Yes, Fred, can I help you?
Your lordship's man is here, my lord, and says you may wish to be advised of his arrival.
Yes, quite right. I'm just coming.
I must be off too, Whimsy. Due at my surgery.
Righty-ho.
I'll see you another time.
Yes, cheerio, and thank you so much. Hello, what's this? I say, that's interesting. Very interesting. So you understand what I want you to do, Bunter?
Yes, my lord. Your lordship requires photographs of the smoking room, the library, and the anteroom between the two.
That's it. Now, we'd better look into the secretary's office just to let him know what we're up to.
Come in.
Ah, morning, Collier.
Oh, hello, Whimsy.
Come in, Bunter. Look, I say, Collier, you recollect old Fentiman popping off in that inconsiderate way a little time ago?
Not likely to forget it. Since Armistice Day, I've had 3 notes of complaint about it from that infernal grumbler Weatheridge. One, because the servants didn't notice the matter earlier, set of inattentive rascals and all that. 2, because the undertaker's men had to take the coffin past his door and disturbed him. And 3, because he says the telephone between the smoking room and the library was out of order that morning or some such rot.
Well, what does that have to do with the old general?
Lord knows, the telephone wasn't out of order anyway. But Weatheridge insists there was a notice saying it was on the door. Who'd be a secretary?
Awfully sorry for you, old lad. But look, I'm not here to make trouble. The fact is, there's a bit of a muddle about the exact minute the old boy passed out. And I'm having a look into it. Don't want to fuss me, but I'd like a few photographs of the place just to keep the lie of the land under my hawk-like optic, what? Bunter here's got a camera. Look, do you mind pretending that he's the bloke from the Twaddler or the Picture News or something and giving him your official blessing while he totters around with the doings?
Mysterious idiot. Well, of course, if you like. What do you want done?
Well, I don't want to go round with Bunter myself. Give the show away, don't you know. May he operate from here?
Certainly. Look, I must go and see about some wine now, Whimsy. Can I leave you to it?
Yes, righty-ho, Collier. Yes, and thanks awfully. Yeah. You know, Bunter, there is something odd about this case. I've spoken to the commissionaire, the assistant commissionaire, the hall porter and the cloakroom attendant this morning. And not one of them remembers seeing the old general arrive here on Armistice Day. Now, why should that be?
I couldn't say, my lord.
You don't think that he was never here at all, do you? Walking about invisible and trying hard to communicate like the unfortunate ghost in that story of somebody or others.
The general must have been here in the body, my lord, because there was the body.
Yes, that's true. Yes, I'm afraid we can't explain away the body. But what time did he arrive? That is what I would like to know. The manservant fellow, Woodward, could help us there. Look, have you had any luck with him?
Oh, yes, my lord. Mm-hmm. I'm being taken round to meet him after luncheon.
Well, excellent. Then be sure to get out of him, Bunter, every possible detail about what the general did on November the 10th. His visit to his sister and all that, and what time it was in the afternoon and so forth. And most important of all, find out precisely when the old boy left his flat on the morning of the 11th. That'll give us a line on when he arrived here.
Very good, my lord.
Hello, Whimsy speaking.
My lord?
Where are you, Bunter?
At the late General Fentiman's flat, my lord.
Well, what have you got to report?
With regard to the General's movements on November the 10th, my lord, Woodward informs me that the telephone call from Lady Dormer's requesting the General's presence at her ladyship's bedside came through at about 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
To the flat, do you mean?
Yes, my lord. Woodward tells me that in order to spare the General any unnecessary shock, he went down to the Bellona Club in order to break the news to him in person. The general, it seems, was somewhat taken aback by it, but after a few minutes said to Woodward that he considered it his duty to go. Whereupon, my lord, Woodward wrapped him up carefully and put him into a taxi. And that, my lord, was the last time Woodward saw him.
The last time?
Yes, my lord. Woodward tells me that when General Fentiman failed to return at his usual time of 7:30, he thought he was perhaps staying to dine at Lady Dormer's and took no notice of it. However, my lord, by 9 o'clock, he began to be worried and was just thinking of calling up the household at Lady Dormer's to ask when he was to be expected home when the telephone rang. It was a gentleman who said, "Is that Woodward?" And Woodward replied that it was. And then the caller said, "Woodward, General Fentiman wishes me to tell you not to wait up for him as he is spending the night with me." So Woodward said, "Excuse me, sir, who is it speaking, please?" And the gentleman said, "Mr. Oliver, my lord."
Oliver?
Yes, my lord.
So General Fentiman never came home that night?
No, my lord.
Bunter, don't move from where you are. I am coming round at once.
Very good, my lord.
In that episode of The Unpleasantness of the Bellona Club, the parts were played as follows. Lord Peter Whimsy, Ian Carmichael. Bunter, Peter Jones. George Fentiman, Martin Jarvis. Mr. Merbles, John Gabriel. Dr. Penberthy, Christopher Emmett. Collier, Blaine Fairman. Challoner, John Dunbar. Colonel Marchbanks, Wilfred Carter. Armistice Night was adapted by Chris Miller from the book The Unpleasantness at the Bellona Club by Dorothy L. Sayers. The programme was produced by Simon Brett.